Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have a news flash on a major storm that swept through Descanso and Alpine over the weekend, plus a recap of several wildfires in East County as fire season ramps up. A pro-Israeli rally is planned in El Cajon on July 25th, and you may be surprised to hear who the speakers are in an unusual coalition aiming to stand up against anti-Semitism. An arrest has been made in the murder of security guard Kenneth Love in Spring Valley, a killing alleged to be part of an extortion scheme involving gang members targeting marijuana dispensaries. Paid poll workers are needed for the upcoming gubernatorial recall election if you're looking for some extra money, and we'll have details on how you can apply with the County Registrar of Voters. The body of a migrant found in Dulzura highlights the increasingly deadly consequences for undocumented immigrants crossing the border in our region. Then on Green Scene, learn about the Julian Hiking Challenge and hear why the Julian News, the town's only newspaper, is for sale in hopes of saving journalism in Julian. Sheriff's deputies and medical personnel saved 7 lives at a prison in Otay Mesa following a mass overdose involving fentanyl. The county has issued a noise advisory for Descanso and Eastern Alpine due to military training coming up, and we'll have details. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the most fun festivals and events happening in July and August in our inland region, including the Ramona Country Fair, Pine Valley Days, A Taste of Julian, outdoor concerts, car shows, movies, and more. From 2021 Talks, we'll have some California updates on LA's new mask mandate due to COVID, how a court ruling to overturn DACA is impacting young immigrants, and an arrest made in a plot to blow up Democratic Party headquarters in Sacramento. We'll also have some national news, including threats to voting rights and the Biden administration's plan for child care tax credits. Then from California News Service, hear how California's latest budget bills will help families and aim to combat poverty. The Tyson Company has recalled pre-cooked chicken products due to listeria contamination. Learn which ones on today's show. And finally, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes, an oldie but goodie, our interview with Lynn Morgan Spreen, the author of the novel Dakota Blues. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Thunderstorms resulted in 84 lightning strikes in our region on Saturday, July 17th, nearly all of them in Descanso, where our transmitter is located, and Alpine. On a Descanso discussion forum on Facebook, some residents described the loud thunderbolts as house shakers, insane, and a wake-up call from Mother Nature. Severe weather prompted a flash flood warning from the National Weather Service due to monsoonal rains that were forecast, although the actual rainfall was relatively light, only about a tenth of an inch in Descanso. The storm also caused a power outage there for several hours. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Climate change and drought are fueling hot, dry conditions across San Diego's backcountry. As major wildfires burn across much of California, several brush fires have already sparked evacuations and concerns locally. The Isabel Fire started on July 3rd when a trash truck struck a motorhome, sparking dry brush along Highway 79 in Santa Isabel. The fire forced shutdown of the highway and burned an estimated 173 acres over 3 days, threatening homes and prompting evacuations. On July 10th, the road fire forced shutdown of Interstate 8 in Alpine and burned over 70 acres. The road fire was also started by a vehicle, according to CAL FIRE. On July 11th, the Marin Fire near the Azura was started by a vehicle that ignited dry brush near a shooting range, burning over 50 acres and briefly threatening power lines and homes before firefighters doused the blaze. And on July 16th, the border fire that began in Mexico crossed the international boundary at night, prompting evacuation of Tecate on the U.S. side of the border before firefighters controlled the blaze. No cause of this fire has been announced as of our show taping deadline. Three of these four fires were caused by vehicles. CAL FIRE urges motorists to be sure your vehicles are in good repair and to avoid parking or driving on dry brush along the shoulders of roadways. Also avoid using equipment such as weed whackers during the heat of the day when they can easily spark a fire. Have an evacuation kit packed and an evacuation plan in place for your family so that you can be ready to leave on a moment's notice if a fire threatens your community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Alexa Oslowski.
In response to an alarming number of violent attacks on Jewish people in synagogues in the U.S. and locally, a rally titled We Are Israel will be held in downtown El Cajon's Prescott Promenade on Sunday, July 25th at 3 p.m. The rally is organized by Shield of David, a group founded to stand up against anti-Semitism and promote Jewish education, along with other organizations. The event website at weareisrael2021.com states, because the number of anti-Semitic attacks has never been this high in the U.S., Jew hatred seems to have no consequences. We deserve to go to a restaurant without being harassed for being a Jew. We deserve to be protected by law the same way as any other minority group. The rally features Jewish and Christian speakers, as well as prominent political figures. The keynote speaker is Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State and ex-director of the CIA during the Trump administration. Other speakers include Dr. Eli Ben Moshe, who founded Shield of David last spring to teach young Jewish adults how to protect themselves against anti-Semitism physically and mentally through training and education. Matthew Haverim, an Iranian Jew who survived a violent anti-Semitic attack, will also speak. So will Jennifer Carlin, who won the National Teen Advocacy Award from the Lawfare Project for her advocacy against discrimination and anti-Semitism. Also on the agenda are Libertarian Talk Radio show host Larry Allen Elder and Dumasani Washington, the founder and CEO of the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells will also speak. In a video promoting the event, Mayor Wells states,
"In this particular time in human history, it's never been more important for Jews and Christians to stand together in solidarity. It's also important that we do that publicly."
El Cajon is home to many Middle Eastern immigrants of multiple faiths, and the city is no stranger to multi-denominational events to stand against persecution of religious minorities. Notably, in 2014, a prayer vigil was held in downtown El Cajon for persecuted Chaldean Christians fleeing Iraq after massacres of Chaldeans in Baghdad by Muslim extremists. That event drew thousands of people and featured speakers including a Jewish rabbi, an evangelical minister, a Chaldean Catholic bishop, Mayor Bill Wells, and others. Now, the focus has shifted to speaking out against anti-Semitism targeting Jews following attacks on the Jewish community internationally, nationally, and here in San Diego County. Recent local incidents include the 2019 Passover synagogue shooting of Shabbat at Poway that killed a woman and injured three others, including a rabbi, as well as anti-Semitic graffiti at several sites, including San Diego State University earlier this spring. A disturbing 2021 survey of American Jewish people conducted by the Anti-Defamation League found that in the last 5 years, 63% had experienced or witnessed anti-Semitism. That's up from 54% in 2020. And 25% of those surveyed, or 1 in 4 American Jews, said they had been targeted by anti-Semitic comments, slurs, or threats. Most alarming, 9% said they had been physically attacked just because they are Jewish. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Angela Kurish with the Crime Beat Report. Three men have been charged with murdering Kenneth Love, a security guard who was shot and killed on June 2nd last year at an illegal marijuana dispensary on Troy Street in Spring Valley. According to San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen, the shooting was tied into a broader scheme to extort the illegal dispensaries for money. If the extortion money was not paid, the defendants allegedly used threats and violence to intimidate owners. Steffen says the gang is believed responsible for other Spring Valley area shootings in July 2019 and November 2019. After an investigation by San Diego Sheriff's Homicide Detectives and the FBI Violent Crimes Task Force, three defendants were arrested for Love's murder. Two additional defendants have also been charged in connection with the scheme to rob and extort money from illegal dispensaries. Two of the defendants are gang members from Los Angeles area, and the third is a San Diego man associated with a local gang. Davion Hicks Sr., Curry Williams Jr., and Jamal Johnson have all been charged with murder, conspiracy to commit extortion, and other offenses related to the Spring Valley shootings. Adrian Casey Batten was charged with conspiracy to commit extortion and other offenses related to the Spring Valley shootings. Jester Ramos has been charged with attempted robbery and shooting at an occupied building. All have pleaded not guilty. On June 23rd, the victims' loved ones joined community members and sheriff's personnel at the First Baptist Church of Spring Valley to hand out flyers asking people with information about the murder to come forward. Sheriff Bill Gore thanked the public for submitting tips, adding, "This is an example of how law enforcement and community collaboration can hold criminals accountable for their actions."
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The Registrar of Voters is seeking temporary site managers to run polling locations for the September 14th California gubernatorial recall election. Site managers earn $20 an hour and work about 125 hours over a five-week period. For the upcoming election, in-person voting locations will be open for 4 days instead of one. The Registrar's office will hire election workers rather than use volunteer poll workers because training is more extensive for the expanded time period. Site managers will be required to train and lead election workers in a professional, nonpartisan manner. The Registrar is seeking people who are team players, exhibit strong leadership skills, and display flexibility, patience, and integrity. Site managers work up to 3 days a week during the pre-election weeks, attend training, and train their election workers. Personal protective equipment will be provided to workers so they can conduct the election process safely during the COVID-19 pandemic. English speakers who are bilingual in Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, or Chinese are also needed. For more information on applying to become a voting site manager, you can call 858-565-5800 or email pollworker@sdcounty.ca.gov.
On June 30th, a search and rescue group found the body of a man in a remote area of Dulzura in San Diego's southeast county. He is believed to be from Mexico, part of a group of undocumented immigrants crossing the international border. According to the medical examiner, his identity remains unknown. He is one of an estimated 10,000 people estimated to have died crossing the U.S.-Mexico border since 1994, according to Border Angels. That number continues to rise due, in part, to construction of the border wall, which has forced migrants into more remote and dangerous areas, where extreme heat and treacherous terrain claim all too many lives. An increase in people fleeing dangerous conditions in Central America and Mexico, as well as a post-pandemic surge, have all contributed to a rise in recent border crossings and deaths. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that more migrants died crossing the border in the first 3 months of this year than in all of 2019. All of this has further increased pressure on Congress to address a history of failed immigration policies and consider enacting comprehensive immigration reforms proposed by the Biden administration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
You're invited to explore some of Julian's most beautiful trails in the Julian Hiking Challenge. Entrants must complete 5 specific hikes in the Julian area, then post selfies to share at visitjulia.com after each hike. Also share on social media with the hashtag JulianHikingChallenge2021. Participants will receive a certificate, sticker, and entry into a drawing to win a Julian goodie bag of keepsake items. The first 300 to complete the challenge will also receive a Julian Hiking Challenge patch. The 5 trails are Stonewall Peak Trail in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, Vulcan Mountain Summit Trail, the Santa Isabel Nature Center Loop Trail, the Kanaka Loop Trail, and Upper Creek Trail, also in the Santa Isabel Preserve. There is also a bonus hike on the Anaha Trail in Cleveland National Forest, which is pet-friendly. You can find more details on the Julian Hiking Challenge at www.julianhiking.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Angela Kurish.
For the past 37 years, the Julian News has been the voice of Julian, a historic gold mining town in San Diego's mountain region. Mike Hart and his wife, Michelle Harvey, have owned and run the independent weekly newspaper since July 4, 2004, covering everything from major firestorms to community events. But now the future of the town's only print newspaper is in peril. Mike Hart is battling brain and lung cancer. Due to his health issues, the couple has put the newspaper they love up for sale in hopes of finding someone to keep journalism alive in Julian. But so far, no serious offers have been received, Harvey told East County Magazine in a phone call. Mike Hart does 80-90% of the work on the publication, his wife says. She writes a column, and the most recent one featured the couple's 17th anniversary of publishing the Julian News. Harvey calls Julian a wonderful little community. The Julian News also serves other areas nearby in San Diego County's backcountry mountain areas, such as Ramona and Ranchita. The newspaper was founded back in 1984 by Buzz Tom and has had two other owners before Hart and Harvey acquired the Julian News on Independence Day 2004. Mike originally wanted a radio station, but there were none for sale, so his wife says, "We bought the newspaper and we're really glad we did." The independent newspaper owners soon learned that bias is often in the eye of the beholder. Readers asked Hart about his editorial angle, with some accusing the prior owner of a right-wing slant and others accusing him of a left-wing slant. Hart and Harvey have aspired to cover all sides, Harvey says. They haven't shied away from controversial news stories. They took heat over coverage of the county taking control of Julian's longtime volunteer fire department, but Harvey insists what we were actually doing was being unbiased. She adds that when it comes to letters to the editor, we publish all letters we receive as long as they are factual and don't slander or libel both sides. The newspaper has covered milestones in the community, including keeping readers informed during the devastating Witch Creek fire that ravaged the region in 2007 and made worldwide news. But it's also covered hyper-local news, including publishing photos of every graduating high school senior, covering the recent fire that destroyed the Ranchita Market, and celebrating the town's sesquicentennial. Hart is receiving treatment at UCSD Medical Center. Harvey says it gives us a lot of hope. But Hart can no longer work long hours, sometimes 80 hours a week, as he did in the past. A GoFundMe account has been set up to help Mike Hart in his battle with cancer. The publication missed two issues recently, and the website hasn't been updated since May. Still, the newspaper is being printed, but with more third-party content for now. The couple is asking $300,000 for the newspaper, which their for sale ad lists as highly profitable, even after a year of pandemic lockdowns kept tourists, the lifeblood of Julian, away. The newspaper is distributed weekly to subscribers and in boxes around Julian, as well as at outlets such as markets, restaurants, and the Julian Chamber of Commerce. Harvey reflects on the couple's 17 years of reporting community news. "We've absolutely loved it," she concludes wistfully, adding, "We wish we could do it for the rest of our lives." You can learn more or contact the publishers at juliannews.com or call 760-765-2231. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego Sheriff's deputies and medical staff at the George Bailey Detention Facility in Otay Mesa saved the lives of seven inmates suspected of overdosing on fentanyl. The mass overdose incident occurred on Saturday afternoon, July 17th. According to the Sheriff's Department, an inmate was found unconscious and unresponsive, so deputies quickly notified medical staff and administered naloxone. Also known as Narcan, naloxone is a nasal spray used to counter decreased breathing in an opioid overdose victim. As deputies were assisting the first victim, six other inmates began showing signs of being under the influence of fentanyl, so deputies and emergency medical personnel immediately administered naloxone to all of them. All seven were taken to hospitals and are all expected to recover, according to the sheriff. District Attorney Summer Steffen recently warned the public about an alarming rise in fentanyl overdose deaths countywide, including deaths from counterfeit pain pills sold illegally. San Diego County has the highest number of jail deaths in California, including some deaths from drug overdoses among inmates. Fortunately, this time, 7 lives are saved thanks to the prompt actions of deputies and medical personnel armed with naloxone. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with an announcement from San Diego County. The county has issued a noise advisory for East County's Descanso and East Alpine communities due to military training, which is scheduled for Wednesday, July 21st and Monday, July 26th. The U.S. Army will be conducting training exercises in cooperation with the county sheriff's department near the 7800 block of Campbell Ranch Road in Alpine. This training exercise is not in response to any real-world event, according to the Army. If you live or work in this area, you may see or hear military helicopters and hear loud noises, but don't be alarmed as it's only a training exercise. The U.S. Army states that it appreciates the cooperation of the community and local businesses in the vicinity of this training and apologizes in advance for any disturbances that it may cause. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This week's Destination East County features the return of more cherished local festivals, including Pine Valley Days, the Ramona Country Fair, and A Sip of Julian. Plus, find outdoor concerts and movies happening all summer long across San Diego's inland region. The 50th annual Pine Valley Days will take place on Friday, July 30th and Saturday, July 31st. The festivities begin with a deep pit barbecue on Friday night, July 30th at Pine Valley Park. Then on Saturday morning, July 31st, the Pine Valley Days Parade rolls out at 9 a.m. along Old Highway 80, followed by family fun festivities at the Pine Valley Park with activities for kids, live music, and vendors. All proceeds benefit the Mountain Empire Men's Club funds to support education in communities in the Mountain Empire region, including scholarships for students and movies in the park. You can get more information at pinevalleydays.com. On Saturday, July 31st, the Julian Chamber of Commerce will co-host the 6th annual Sip of Julian, featuring tastes of alcoholic beverages and local cuisine. Items sampled include wine, craft beer, craft cocktails, hard cider, and more. This event is limited to age 21 and up. The event runs from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. July 31st and gives tasters time to enjoy their samples paired with small bites at each venue. Take in the scenery and spend a relaxing day enjoying the sights and sounds of Julian. Ticket holders have the option of a self-guided day or purchasing a ticket with shuttle service. This event is a fundraising benefit for Julian's annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting Celebration. You can make reservations at visitjulian.com for the Sip of Julian. The Ramona Country Fair is presented by Ramona's Chamber of Commerce Friday, July 30th through Sunday, August 1st. This year, the old-fashioned Ramona Country Fair celebrates its 50th anniversary, a year late due to COVID. The 3-day event will feature a midway of carnival rides and games, food and craft vendors, wine tasting, and live music. Other entertainment ranges from Western staples such as a mock shootout, barrel racing, and mutton busting, to medieval and Renaissance performances, a cornhole tournament, T-Rex races, an art contest, a livestock auction, and a cowboy challenge. The fair is held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. There's no admission charge, though fees may apply to some activities. Proceeds from the fair will benefit the Ramona community, including scholarships for Ramona students, educational grants, and other events. For more information, you can visit Ramona Chamber's website or the Ramona Country Fair page on Facebook. Get ready for some rockin' hot summer music concerts with dancing. El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Summer Series is back with concerts each Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. from July through October. The concerts are held in Prescott Promenade Park on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. You can bring a picnic or come early and dine at one of the restaurants nearby. In addition, El Cajon's Classic Car Nights are back every Wednesday evening at Prescott Promenade all summer long. You can get a full list of the concert performers and car show themes each week at downtownelcajon.com. Santee's summer concert series are held Thursday nights starting at 6:30 p.m. at Town Center Community Park, now through August 12th. You can find more information at the City of Santee's website, cityofsantee.gov. You're invited to come enjoy a lineup of local bands at La Mesa's Sundays at 6 summer concert series. You can grab a picnic and lawn chair and relax in the outdoor amphitheater at Harry Griffin Park from 6 to 7 p.m. each Sunday through July 25th with a variety of musical styles. And get details at cityoflamesa.us/special events. Lemon Grove's Concerts in the Park series happens each Thursday this summer from 6:30 to 8 at Berry Street Park. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic or have a barbecue while enjoying the sweet sounds of summer. You'll also need a blanket or lawn chair for seating. Pets must be on a leash, and be aware that alcohol and smoking are not allowed at Lemon Grove's Berry Street Park. San Diego County's Summer Movies in the Park are back with options for live viewings in parks across San Diego County, as well as options for viewings from cars at some locations and several online viewings. You can get a full list of movie showings at summermoviesinthepark.com.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We are seeing outbreaks of cases in parts of the country that have low vaccination coverage. In the last week, 10% of counties have moved into high transmission risk.
CDC Director Rochelle Walensky encouraged local officials across the country to consider reimposing mask mandates, following a move by Los Angeles County to do so, regardless of vaccination status. After an uptick in cases, the county lifted its previous mask requirement only about a month ago. Walensky said COVID-19 infections are up 70%, hospitalizations 36%, and deaths 26% over the last 7 days. In a ruling Friday, a federal judge in Texas blocked new applications for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, increasing pressure on Congress to find a legislative solution for undocumented immigrants who arrived in the country as minors. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says the program has been a life changer for more than 800,000 Dreamers since 2012.
It has allowed them to work, pursue higher education, and serve in America's military. DACA has unleashed the full potential of Dreamers.
Over the weekend, Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton spoke at a breakfast hosted by the Rockingham County, New Hampshire Republican Party. Cotton spoke out against critical race theory and said he would introduce legislation to stop military officers from teaching it. The senator is considered a potential 2024 presidential contender.
This is one of the most important battles we face today, because if we allow these radical on the left to indoctrinate an entire generation of our kids in schools, what will we gain if we win a few elections in the meantime?
In Arizona's ongoing election audit, both sides complain the other hasn't provided documents related to the count. Maricopa County Judge Michael Kemp shot down a motion from the GOP to dismiss a lawsuit from liberal watchdog group American Oversight, seeking documents related to the state Senate's audit. Joanna Lydgate of the state's United Democracy Center says the audit is a farce.
It's led by cyber ninjas, an unaccredited and inexperienced group. They're only auditing one county, Maricopa, and only the presidential and Senate races, not the down ballot races, in which some of the very politicians leading this charge were themselves elected. So there are your first red flags.
Federal prosecutors have charged two men for conspiring to attack the offices of the Democratic Party in Sacramento, California. Authorities say the men also tried to coordinate with an extremist militia group. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, July the 19th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. A newly released map identifies portions of the U.S.-Mexico border wall built by the Trump administration. Ross Brown's been talking with conservation groups and wildlife advocates who say it's alarming.
The Biden administration halted construction and said it will use federal funds to assess damage caused by the new higher walls. Map creator Miles Traphagen with the nonprofit Wildlands Network says in addition to environmental damage, the project identified several areas in border states where restoration to benefit wildlife is needed.
There's very high biodiversity in southeastern Arizona, southwestern New Mexico. It's a meeting ground of the neotropics and the temperate zones. It's the only place where the jaguar and the black bear share the same trail.
Upon halting border wall construction, the Biden administration said it plans to perform environmental assessments, which had been waived by Trump to speed construction. Michael Dax with the Wildlands Network says the map may surprise some who don't realize the extent of wall that was built in 3 years or how much of North America has been walled off from Mexico.
The Trump administration was sadly very successful in building significant portions of wall. It has been hugely impactful to wildlife. There are numerous pictures of wildlife that are dead along the wall, not able to reach historic water sources.
Biden's executive order paused all new border wall construction. Locals say that contractors soon abandon the sites. The largest wildfire in the U.S. torched more dry forest landscape in Oregon on Sunday, one of dozens of major blazes burning across the West as critically dangerous fire weather loomed in coming days. That from The Guardian. They report the destructive bootleg fire just north of the California border grew to more than 476 square miles, an area about the size of Los Angeles. Redistricting reformers are urging the people charged with drawing new voting maps in Missouri to commit to putting the voters over partisan interests.
Governor Mike Parson has appointed a bipartisan group of commissioners to draw state legislative maps. The legislature draws congressional maps. Caroline Fan with the Missouri Asian American Youth Foundation says in the past, map making has been done out of the public eye. She wants to see more transparency this year and says one crucial piece is listening to local residents about what matters to them. It could be a common place of worship, a school district, a race or ethnicity.
This is our opportunity as Missourians to hit refresh and if certain areas have grown, other areas have shrunk, to make sure that everyone is well represented and that we have fair maps.
I'm Lily Bolke reporting.
This is PNS. Iowa's government has 180 boards and commissions, with many consisting of appointed members, but advocates fear most do not include people with disabilities. An emerging effort aims to get more of these voices to serve on public panels. Brooke Lovelace is director of the Iowa Developmental Disabilities Council and says there hasn't been much tracking of this issue.
Boards and commissions that folks with disabilities should be applying for and serving on and something that's of interest to them, whether that be economic development, the Art Council.
The council is having conversations with the governor's office, which appoints members, about increasing inclusion. There's also an online talent bank launched by the Human Rights Department in 2019. It's designed to encourage underserved Iowans to consider openings. Only You Can Prevent Forest Fires, among the more iconic public awareness campaigns. In Minnesota, new funding aims to make boat owners embrace the civic duty of combating aquatic invasive species.
The new two-year state budget includes $1 million aimed at stopping the spread of a specific threat to Minnesota lakes, which is starry stonewort. The money will allow cleaning stations to go up at landings at affected lakes for boaters to use. Jeff Forrester of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocate says there will also be a lot of community-level outreach to change social norms in the water recreation community.
Kind of like adopt a highway, and instead of picking up garbage or not throwing garbage, you're cleaning your boat.
Forrester says starry stonewort is a key focus because of how quickly it can spread to surrounding lakes. It's been detected in at least 16 Minnesota lakes, and the state doesn't want to see what happened in Michigan, where as many as 2,500 lakes are infested. I'm Mike Moen.
And staying on the water, finally, Eric Tegetoff tells us a wide range of groups are supporting an effort to protect cherished rivers in Montana.
Senator John Tester has introduced the Montana Headwaters Legacy Act, which would nearly double the river miles in the state protected as wild and scenic. The effort stretches back more than a decade and includes support from businesses, tribes, and Sibanye Stillwater Mining Company, which operates in the state and is one of the largest platinum and palladium producers in the world. Gallatin County Commissioner Scott McFarland says his county's economy relies heavily on natural resources.
People come here to recreate around our rivers, and they expect to be able to have the pristine West here. It's part of what they see a value in visiting here, and it's also a reason people want to live here and invest here. It's the reason that companies are able to recruit employees here.
The act would protect 385 miles and 20 segments of river.
This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for starting your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on interesting radio stations. And you can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. The Public News Service Daily Newscast, July the 19th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. A newly released map identifies portions of the U.S.-Mexico border wall built by the Trump administration. Ross Brown's been talking with conservation groups and wildlife advocates who say it's alarming.
The Biden administration halted construction and said it will use federal funds to assess damage caused by the new higher walls. Map creator Miles Traphagen with the nonprofit Wildlands Network says in addition to environmental damage, the project identified several areas in border states where restoration to benefit wildlife is needed.
There's very high biodiversity in southeastern Arizona, southwestern New Mexico. It's a meeting ground of the neotropics and the temperate zones. It's the only place where the jaguar and the black bear share the same trail.
Upon halting border wall construction, the Biden administration said it plans to perform environmental assessments, which had been waived by Trump to speed construction. Michael Dax with the Wildlands Network says the map may surprise some who don't realize the extent of wall that was built in 3 years or how much of North America has been walled off from Mexico.
The Trump administration was sadly very successful in building significant portions of wall. It has been hugely impactful to wildlife. There are numerous pictures of wildlife that are dead along the wall, not able to reach historic water sources.
Biden's executive order paused all new border wall construction. Locals say that contractors soon abandon the sites. The largest wildfire in the U.S. torched more dry forest landscape in Oregon on Sunday, one of dozens of major blazes burning across the West as critically dangerous fire weather loomed in coming days. That from The Guardian. They report the destructive bootleg fire just north of the California border grew to more than 476 square miles, an area about the size of Los Angeles. Redistricting reformers are urging the people charged with drawing new voting maps in Missouri to commit to putting the voters over partisan interests.
Governor Mike Parson has appointed a bipartisan group of commissioners to draw state legislative maps. The legislature draws congressional maps. Caroline Fan with the Missouri Asian American Youth Foundation says in the past, map making has been done out of the public eye. She wants to see more transparency this year and says one crucial piece is listening to local residents about what matters to them. It could be a common place of worship, a school district, a race or ethnicity.
This is our opportunity as Missourians to hit refresh and if certain areas have grown, other areas have shrunk, to make sure that everyone is well represented and that we have fair maps.
I'm Lily Bolke reporting.
This is PNS. Iowa's government has 180 boards and commissions, with many consisting of appointed members, but advocates fear most do not include people with disabilities. An emerging effort aims to get more of these voices to serve on public panels. Brooke Lovelace is director of the Iowa Developmental Disabilities Council and says there hasn't been much tracking of this issue.
Boards and commissions that folks with disabilities should be applying for and serving on and something that's of interest to them, whether that be economic development, the Art Council.
The council is having conversations with the governor's office, which appoints members, about increasing inclusion. There's also an online talent bank launched by the Human Rights Department in 2019. It's designed to encourage underserved Iowans to consider openings. Only You Can Prevent Forest Fires, among the more iconic public awareness campaigns. In Minnesota, new funding aims to make boat owners embrace the civic duty of combating aquatic invasive species.
The new two-year state budget includes $1 million aimed at stopping the spread of a specific threat to Minnesota lakes, which is starry stonewort. The money will allow cleaning stations to go up at landings at affected lakes for boaters to use. Jeff Forrester of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocate says there will also be a lot of community-level outreach to change social norms in the water recreation community.
Kind of like adopt a highway, and instead of picking up garbage or not throwing garbage, you're cleaning your boat.
Forrester says starry stonewort is a key focus because of how quickly it can spread to surrounding lakes. It's been detected in at least 16 Minnesota lakes, and the state doesn't want to see what happened in Michigan, where as many as 2,500 lakes are infested. I'm Mike Moen.
And staying on the water, finally, Eric Tegenhoff tells us a wide range of groups are supporting an effort to protect cherished rivers in Montana.
Senator John Tester has introduced the Montana Headwaters Legacy Act, which would nearly double the river miles in the state protected as wild and scenic. The effort stretches back more than a decade and includes support from businesses, tribes, and Sibanye Stillwater Mining Company, which operates in the state and is one of the largest platinum and palladium producers in the world. Gallatin County Commissioner Scott McFarland says his county's economy relies heavily on natural resources.
People come here to recreate around our rivers, and they expect to be able to have the pristine West here. It's part of what they see a value in visiting here, and it's also a reason people want to live here and invest here. It's the reason that companies are able to recruit employees here.
The act would protect 385 miles and 20 segments of river.
This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for starting your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on interesting radio stations. And you can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times. Congressional Black Caucus leader Joyce Beatty and nine other protesters were arrested Thursday when Beatty led the group into the Hart Senate building to pressure Republicans to pass the For the People Act. Capitol Police said the group violated D.C. law prohibiting crowding and obstruction. Threatened with arrest, Texas House Democrats say they're prepared to stay in Washington to thwart a bill that would impose new voting restrictions. Chair of the Texas Legislative Black Caucus, Nicole Collier.
Voting shouldn't be hard. It should be easy. But yet in Texas, they will make it easier for you to carry a gun than to exercise your constitutional right to vote. So that's why we're here in Washington, to get model legislation from the federal level.
The Democrats have the support of dozens of Black faith leaders who traveled to Austin Thursday for a prayer rally. Co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, the Reverend Dr. William Barber, urged Congress to pass the For the People Act and restore the Voting Rights Act.
We can change the heart of this nation, but we've got to decide in this moment. Forward together, forward together, forward together, and not one step back.
Now to Arizona, where a judge rejected a motion to dismiss a watchdog group's public records lawsuit over the Maricopa County 2020 election audit. Senate President Karen Fann said the audit is near completion, but called on county officials to hand over routers and other materials.
This is not about Trump. This is not about overturning the election. This has never been about anything other than election integrity. This is the epitome of what America stands for.
Fann contends the number of ballots tallied do not match the total documented by Maricopa County. The Green Party of the United States kicked off its annual national meeting Thursday with a specific focus on anti-racism and intersectionality.
As an alternative party, one of the historic roles of alternative parties in this country is to keep pushing the envelope of progress, to ensure that the power structure never rests on its laurels after making incremental change.
Communications manager Michael O'Neill explains advocating for social justice and expanding grassroots outreach are current priorities for the party, which has a presence in two dozen states. And finally, from the White House, President Joe Biden said the monthly child tax credits, now being sent out, are one of his proudest accomplishments.
To give you a sense of how transformative this would be the largest ever one-year decrease in child poverty in the history of the United States of America.
The payments of either $250 or $300 per child will continue through December, with the remainder at tax time. About 88% of children in the U.S. will be covered by the expanded credit. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Huge new aid programs are beating back poverty in the Golden State, especially among families with children. Governor Gavin Newsom just signed a raft of budget bills, meaning CalWORKs families will get another $640 by the end of this month, on top of the $600 payments already sent to those in the CalWORKs and Supplemental Security Income programs, and three rounds of federal stimulus payments. Mike Harold with the Western Center on Law and Poverty says these supports are a boost to parents who lost jobs during the pandemic.
We are really lifting up a lot of low-income families. They're getting real financial assistance in the $5,000, $7,000 range. And really, believe me, it's going to make a big difference in people's lives.
The California Comeback Plan, as Newsom calls it, also puts $5.2 billion toward rental assistance, so families can apply to get all their back rent paid and even get a few months ahead. And last week, parents started receiving payments of up to $300 a month per child as part of the Biden administration's expanded child tax credit. Harold says the fact that the funds are going out monthly instead of all coming in at tax time is a game changer.
This will help to really provide more financial stability. They're going to have more money every month in their accounts to be able to pay bills and put food on the table. And this is something that advocates have wanted for a long time.
And the help for children doesn't stop there. California has also added 100,000 new slots to the state-funded child care program and raised what it pays child care operators to encourage more of them to reopen as the pandemic subsides. The budget also includes a significant funding increase for K-12 schools. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Mitchell Murphy with the Health Alert. Tyson Foods has announced a recall of frozen, fully cooked chicken products due to possible listeria contamination. The tainted products were shipped nationwide to major retailers and institutions, including hospitals, nursing homes, restaurants, schools, and military sites. The products are linked to at least one death and several illnesses to date. Federal investigators are working to determine if there are any additional illnesses linked to these products. The frozen, fully cooked chicken products were produced between December 26, 2020 and April 13th of this year. The product subject to recall bear establishment number EST-P-7089 on the product bag or inside the USDA mark of inspection. Consumption of food contaminated with listeria can cause listeriosis, a serious infection. Listeriosis can cause fever, muscle aches, headache, stiff neck, confusion, loss of balance, and convulsions, as well as gastrointestinal symptoms. In pregnant women, the infection can cause miscarriages, stillbirths, premature delivery, or life-threatening infection of the newborn. In addition, serious and sometimes fatal infections in older adults and persons with weakened immune systems. Listeriosis is treated with antibiotics. Persons in high-risk categories who experience flu-like symptoms within 2 months after eating contaminated food should seek medical care. If you have any of the recalled Tyson frozen, fully cooked chicken products, you should throw them away or return them to the retailer for a refund.
Next up, we're going to be playing one of our Best of East County episodes, an oldie but goodie interview with author Lynn Morgan Spreen, the author of the novel Dakota Blues.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Lynn Morgan Spreen, author of Dakota Blues, which won the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. In the last couple of years, my guest has transitioned from journalist, columnist, and human resources executive to full-time writer and blogger. Welcome, Lynn. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Lynn, although Dakota Blues is a work of fiction, the story is based on the lives of your ancestors, German immigrants who settled in North Dakota in the late 1800s. Can you tell us a little about the history of that, of your family, and what inspired you to turn it into fiction?
I went there recently, and I was just stunned by the stories that I was hearing from my extended family, many of whom I was meeting for the first time. They were telling me stories of how the immigrants, how difficult they had it. And, I mean, they would come over on ships and then trains and then, you know, wagons. And there was nothing there for them to build houses with. No trees. They didn't realize this. So they had to build, like, dugouts in the ground. And they lived essentially in holes in the ground for the first couple of summers.
I mean, winters.
Yes. Through the first couple of winters. And then as their fortunes improved, they would build houses out of, like, clumps of sod called soddies, then stone, then finally lumber. And the things they went through were just so shocking. I wanted to convey those stories through my fiction. Although I'm not a historian, I didn't want those stories to be lost. Right. So by writing what my preferred fiction is, a work of, you know, telling the story of a woman in midlife who's having to start all over again, she finds her resiliency by reaching down into her history and pulling up the strength of those ancestors. So it's kind of a cool way to be able to tell the story of my family
right. In
this way.
So for you, the history really inspired the story. It wasn't that you had always planned on writing this kind of story even a book.
Exactly true. Exactly true. The stories are just so stunning. In fact, if I could just say one thing, the Banat Germans, that's my ancestry, they had a saying: to the first generation is death, to the second is hardship, to the third is success.
Wow.
They took the long view of investing for their family's good.
Wow. Very poignant.
Yeah, I know.
Well, your book, Dakota Blues, was recognized by the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. As I understand it, this is a contest for independent authors and publishers. Would you like to say something about independent publishing? What inspires you to make it on your own instead of going the traditional route?
You know, I think that you would be making it on your own even if you went the traditional route these days.
Right.
I don't think there's any such thing the way that things are changing.
Yes.
And so I figured if I'm going to have to do all the marketing, you know, I have the kind of little red hen theory of book publishing.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to have to, you know, grow the wheat and mill the wheat and turn it into flour and make the bread, I'm probably going to enjoy the benefits myself. But more than that, I think even traditionally published authors have to do all of their own marketing these days.
Right.
I enjoy doing the marketing, but more than that, I enjoy the control, being able to create the book cover myself or decide what the format's going to be. And also, there's a greater profit margin, frankly, if you're selling your own books rather than having to support a Madison Avenue operation. So I think the idea is also that you can publish more quickly. You can publish a book in 6 months if you can get it written, whereas with the traditional model, it takes years and years and years to first find an agent and then to get a publishing house, of which there are fewer. So if you like control like I do, kind of a control freak, and also the speed and the revenues, I think those are my answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm doing it. I would encourage others to also.
Well, it sounds like the changes that are going on in society are aligned with what you enjoy.
Yes.
I know you've said that you want people to read about midlife characters, and you have a midlife character in your book. You want them to know about the midlife experience and triumphing over age. What kind of feedback have you received from readers about having an older heroine rather than a younger one?
Oh, this is the most gratifying thing. You know, there are over 70 million people over 50 in this country right now.
Really?
And it's getting, you know, there are more and more every day. Judging from both comments to my blog and also the reviews that I'm getting for my book, people are saying, this is so great. I'm tired of reading about young people. I want to know what's going to happen in the second half.
Right.
And so the idea of a coming-of-age story at midlife is sort of gaining traction. And that's what people are telling me, that they're excited to read about an older person now and what challenges she has.
So what kinds of books do you foresee in the second half of your life?
For me to write, or the things that I think other people will write?
For you to write.
Oh, all I want to write about is this. The same thing. I love the challenges that we face as people in the second half. I think there is so much internal growth. We have so many gifts. There's so much power.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in our culture, we really don't celebrate that.
Right.
That's what I rejoice in. I get so much, I enjoy that so much, telling people, You just don't even know what your strengths are. Let's talk about it. And that's what I write about in story form, in fiction.
That's an inspiring message.
Thanks.
Well, that brings us to your blog, also referred to as Midlife Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your blog and how you see blog writing in the modern writer's life.
My blog, Any Shiny Thing, I called it that because some birds, you know, they get distracted easily by shiny things. And
right.
I didn't want to be limited to one particular topic. But it is about midlife. And I have a controversial recommendation for authors as far as blogging. Right now, everybody's told, all debut authors, all aspiring authors are told, oh, you must have a blog, you must have a blog. Blogs are wonderful. I think you absolutely must have a website. I think as often as you can, you should tinker with that website so as to draw traffic to the website for the purpose of marketing your book. You need to know why you are blogging. If you're blogging because you want to express yourself artistically and you want to see your words in print and mm-hmm. you want to perfect your writing, it's really mm-hmm. a good vehicle for that. But for marketing, I honestly think it takes a lot of time away from what you should be doing, which is your number one priority, creating more stories. And if you are a fiction author, I don't think it's the best way to build a market. If that's your goal, there are other social network platforms already established that can give you a better return on your time for that.
And why do you say that for fiction writers?
Because if I work really hard to bring a lot of people to my blog and they all buy my book, so let's say that's 3,000 people, I make 3,000 sales. Now what? Those 3,000 people are continuing to come back to my blog. We're communing. We're enjoying each other's company. My blog has grown to the point where now it's a campfire and
right.
we're all sitting around it talking. But right. those people have already bought my book. I need new customers.
I see.
If I want to reach out to new customers, that is not the easiest way to do it. It's gratifying for a number of other reasons, but as far as developing a platform for future sales, I really think there are other things that would provide a better payoff, to be
frank. Very interesting. Well, thanks for that insight.
Mm-hmm.
One last question, Lynn. What story are you working on right now, and when will that become available?
Oh, this is so exciting. It's a collection of short stories. It's called Boomer Love, Short Stories of Midlife and Beyond.
Hmm.
And the reason that I'm writing it is because I have so many stories in my head of characters who I want to show that they are, you know, dealing with this midlife deal and how they overcome the challenges and move on in a powerful way, and then they experience joy. Or, not to be a spoiler, but in some of my stories, I actually have them see the light and then run back to their safe place that
right.
isn't so good for them.
Not experience the joy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing. It should be available in probably spring. But after I do that, then I'm going to do a sequel to Dakota Blues.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Lynn Morgan Spreen, please visit our website at www.inanyshinything.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.